Thus far in this podcast, I've spoken with a number of people from various areas of music who are at the top of their profession. Sometimes it's hard to think that these icons were once students as well. So I thought it would be interesting to interview two hardworking and very passionate students from today and ask them to share their dreams and also their struggles. In part one, Marit Tyvand from Oslo, Norway, and Mal Lane from Pocatello, Idaho, talk about how they got involved in music and their path to the present day, especially how they had to deal with auditions. So Marit Tyvand, trumpet, and Mal Lane, trombone, welcome to the podcast. So let me start with just sort of a basic question. This is going to be a really interesting interview for me because I've basically until now, I'd say we've interviewed people who are at the peak of their profession. And the two of you are getting started in your profession. You've not graduated yet, but I think you're both going to have really successful careers. And so I think it's going to be interesting to talk about what makes a really good student. And so let me ask the first question. Mari, maybe you start first. When did you start to play the trumpet? And did you play an instrument before that? But what age were you at when you started with the trumpet?
I started the cornet when I was 10 years old and a school marching band. First, I tried the piano like my sisters, but I didn't like it so much. All my friends were playing in this school marching band, and I didn't, so I thought maybe I should try. And then I started the cornet. I played a couple of years before I got chronic tendonitis, and then I didn't play so much until I was 21, and then I started playing the trumpet.
Mal, when did you start?
I started trombone when I was 10 or 11 years old in middle school. Prior to that, my parents thought it was very important that I become a piano player. So I was like one of those three-year-old, you know, piano kids. I stuck with piano a really long time. I think I was maybe 17 when I stopped so that I could, you know, focus more on trombone in high school. And I never really liked piano. I didn't enjoy practicing, you know, for some reason. And I really liked trombone. It's kind of funny, actually. I didn't want to play it. I wanted to play French horn. But, you know, when we were choosing our instruments, my band director was like, well, you know, French horn is kind of hard, so maybe you should start on trombone and, you know, switch over. And like an idiot, I fell in love. You know, I didn't ever end up switching. I just stuck with it, you know.
You know, like the two of you, I started piano at the age of 9. And my father was taught trumpet and trombone, and I never practiced piano. And so he said, okay, you're going to take trumpet or trombone. Which is it going to be? And I knew I couldn't reach out to seventh position because I was really tiny when I was small. And so that's how I got started on the trumpet. So it seems like our stories are sort of similar. Eddie, when did you start? This is Eddie Ludema, who's joining us, our tech and producer guy.
Hey there, everybody. How you doing? Yeah, that's me. When did I start? I think I started about the same time. Trumpet, I started in seventh grade when I was 11 years old, but I'd been playing piano for, I don't know, 3-4 years before that. I remember doing some piano recitals, and I was addicted to piano mostly because I wanted to play, if my sister's listening, I wanted to play better than she could. So I was pretty competitive, and then once I hit band, I just fell in love with the trumpet.
And when did you decide that you really wanted to play, like you wanted to make a profession out of it?
Sometime in high school, I think I got hit by the bug. Probably when I was in 11th grade, 12th grade, I just really enjoyed things. I mean, I have a long story, and you don't want to interview me. That's boring. But
no, go ahead.
It was a decision between computer science and music, and it took me a while to figure out that I could actually kind of do both, but to go the full out music route is probably once I hit college, I wanted to do it. I was going for it, but that computer thing was always kind of pulling at me. But I think once I hit probably 22 is when I started to go full out music and just go for it.
So Mara, you said you had acute tendonitis, you said, and we've talked about that a little bit, but maybe you could explain what you had to deal with, because it seemed like it was pretty, well, extremely challenging at times.
Yeah, so around the time I was 12 years old, I started to have having problems with my hands and arms. It was a lot of writing in school. I took a lot of notes, writing many pages every day. At the time, I was around 13. It was so bad that my doctor told me I had chronic tendonitis and that I should quit playing and quit writing by hand or computer or anything. So then I basically stopped using my hands for many years. Couldn't carry anything, couldn't write my name, needed help with basically everything. This lasted many years, and even though I was told not to play anymore, if I had a good day, I played a few bars, but I couldn't, some days, maybe 3 bars, play a little bit on the mouthpiece. Many years of a lot of different treatments, trying to figure it out until it got better. When I reached 21, then I could play maybe 20 minutes divided throughout the day. And then from then on, I played a little bit more and more.
I remember you told me that at one point it got so bad that your parents actually had to brush your teeth for you.
Yeah, and my hair. And
wow. And how old were you at that time?
13. From around 13 was it when it got really bad. And then it was stayed bad for many years. I didn't write anything all these years.
And boy. And how did it get better? Was it a certain treatment or just because you outgrew it?
I think I tried most of the treatments that were possible. I stopped using my hands, so they got really weak. And I basically couldn't do anything. And then I started doing a little bit more and more, trying to build up, because I really wanted to play again. That was my main motivation. And then it gradually got better and better. Yeah, I just did too much, and then it was really difficult to get well again.
So between 13 and 21, you could hardly practice at all, but it sounds like you had in the back of your mind that you really wanted to be a player, even though you couldn't play at that time, and just had the hope that someday you'd be able to?
Yeah, I really, I think from the first concert I played when I was 10, I knew that I wanted to be a musician. But I think I didn't know how much I wanted until the doctor told me that I couldn't play anymore. And then I realized I really love this and I want to do this. And then I played a bit on the mouthpiece. If I had a good day, I played a little bit more. I had this ergobras thing, this stick that you put the cornet on. But I didn't play much all these years. But I always thought that I would get well soon, and it took much longer than I thought. I tried to learn things by singing it before I played it or stuff like that.
How about you, Mel? Did you early on decide that you wanted to really go for it as a trombone player, or was it until you got to be about 17?
I was like Eddie in terms of, you know, I took a circuitous and difficult path to wanting to be a career musician. It was actually last year in school. I began college, you know, as a freshman, majoring in pharmacy, because I thought in high school and stuff, I was always good at science and math and, you know, things like that. And my family is all educators, and they placed a large emphasis on getting an education where you could graduate and then sort of immediately get a job. And making lots of money and you know, stuff like that. You know, and
that doesn't sound like music to me.
Yeah, exactly. No, yes, it was not. You know, so I remember being a freshman and just taking trombone lessons for fun and playing in ensembles for fun. And just being very jealous of all of my friends who were music majors, you know, kids that I knew in ensembles and things. And I wanted to do that. And I faced a lot of pushback from my family about those things, which, you know, they've come around. I think they did the best that they could. And it wasn't until last year, actually, my junior year of college, that I was like, you know, I really have two options when I graduate. And one of them is going to make me a lot of money, you know, medical school. And the other one is going to make me very happy, which is music school. And I just decided to go for it. Because I was tired of pursuing something where, especially during the era of COVID, you know, the medical field seemed like really unwise. You know, nurses are burned out and all this kind of stuff. It just seemed like a very bad path to go down. So I wanted to avoid doing something that I didn't really like that much for money. And I decided to pursue, you know, what I really wanted to do and just listen to my gut, which was be a professional trombone player. It took me a very long time to figure it out, but I did, so better late than never, I suppose.
Yeah. There's a great, he's passed away, but William Campbell, who wrote a number of books on mythology, really, really deep thinker, and he has this expression that he calls follow your bliss, you know, whatever will make you blissful. And it sounds like the both of you are doing that, you know, in pursuing music. And you maybe came upon it, this realization at different times in your life, but you're still, you know, you're in that. You both had to overcome some obstacles, some really big obstacles, to get where you are right now. Do you think those obstacles could be conceived as being positive, meaning that they gave you more discipline? They made you want it even more? Mari, do you feel like because you had this period between 13 and 21 where you really couldn't practice that much, and even though you wanted to, that it, when you finally got the chance to practice, that it made it that much more special for you?
I think so. When I started to get better, I was really motivated. I really wanted to play, and really wanted to practice. So I think in a way it was positive, even though it would have been nice to have been able to practice all these years, but in some ways it made me more disciplined. And I knew that because I started so late, either I had to give everything or I should do something else, because it was late to start.
We met when I was teaching at the Norwegian Music Academy, and you came in as a freshman. And I remember during that year, I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I remember there were probably a couple of times when I said, you know, maybe you should practice a little bit less.
Yeah.
Was that true?
Yeah. Sometimes I just thought I have to practice so much. And if I still can play a note when I'm finished for the day, I haven't practiced enough. So I was not always very good at knowing where the limit was.
Well, okay. Mal is the same way. But I think when you put together your tape for Joe Alessi, you did 37 takes of Bolero because you wanted to get it just the way you wanted it.
I did. Well, it was spread over. I think I did it.
It was more than 37, Tony.
It was.
Go ahead, Mal.
It was. Yeah.
Really?
I spread it over a couple of days. And one day it was 33 and the next day it was 37. Yeah. Uh-huh. I can't remember if they were back to back or not, because, you know, I was really out of it during that time. But
And so do you remember which take you used?
Oh, I think it was 8 on the second day. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Okay, yeah. Well, one thing that Mari's already there and you're going there. So Mari has, you know, she's from Norway, and she moved to Frankfurt, where she's now studying with Klaus Schuwerk. She studied at the Norwegian Music Academy, now at the Frankfurt Musikhochschule. And Mal, you are at Idaho State University, and you're going to the Juilliard School of Music. So Mari went to a different country, and your change, to me, it seems like it's even a greater change, even though you're in the same country, than Mari's, going from Pocatello, Idaho, to New York City. Mari, when you went to Frankfurt, was that a hard transition to make, or was it just very comfortable?
It was really comfortable. I really loved it. I didn't have any doubts at any time. It was perfect for me.
Okay, and your German is good?
It's getting better.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Mal, the impression I have is that even though you're from a state that's like not considered to, I guess you could say is pretty rural, you loved New York City, right? You were not intimidated by it.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like home, you know, the layout of Central Park and everything. And just the way that everything is so convenient, especially on the Upper West Side, you know, that's where I hung out because that's where Juilliard is located. And it just seemed so intuitive to me when I got there. I was like, of course this is how you're supposed to live. And a bunch of people crammed in here like sardines. I've always liked tight spaces, you know, small things, being kind of boxed in. I kind of like that. And I mean, naturally, as a person, I'm very shy. You know, like if it was up to me, I wouldn't really talk to hardly anyone. And I love that no one looks at you. You know, when you're walking, I just think it's so great. Like, everybody just keeps their head down because they all have somewhere to be that's, like, important or whatever, you know. Like, and everyone's just, no one's going to talk to you, no one's going to bother you. I mean, that's one of my you know, fears about living in an area that's small like Pocatello is, you know, you go to the grocery store and you're going to hear, "Hey, Mal." And it's like, oh, my God, you know, like you don't want to turn around and see what screwed up person from your past is over there. And so I love New York because there's anonymity in numbers like that. And I'm looking forward to going there and kind of disappearing and, you know, not talking to anyone. I just love everything about it. I mean, even the bad parts, you know. Go ahead.
Even the bad parts. This is Eddie again. Hey, everybody. Oh, so, no. Okay. I get a Discord message from Mal.
What is a Discord message?
It's like a text message. Discord is a chat server thing. Okay. So we have this Discord server and we chat on it. Okay, so, all right, Mal. So I get this message from Mal basically saying, if you don't hear from me again... It's been a good time. It was this really random message. I'm like, what is going on? So if it's okay, because it ties into her love for New York City, can Mal give her story about the first time she gets to New York City?
Yeah, sure. Is that okay? Please do.
All right, here you go. Take it away. This is awesome. I love this.
My New York welcome, you guys. So I traveled out to New York in January to have some trial lessons with Joe Alessi. I flew into LaGuardia, and it was a blizzard, you know, because it was January. And I got in really super late at night, like it was 11:30 or something like that. I left the airport and got into a cab. And blizzard conditions, there's probably 3 or 4 inches of snow on the ground, super slick. And so I wasn't really paying attention. I had all my crap with me in the cab, you know, trombone case, backpack, and everything. And we were in Harlem. I think it was like 129th or 125th or something like that. Mr. Alessi lives in Nyack, which is on the other side of the river, and it's, you know, outside of the city a little ways, maybe like 45 minutes in a cab. And so I was thinking, oh yeah, it's going to be a long cab ride. You know, I'm kind of dozing off. I have my AirPods in and stuff. I'm like not even paying attention. And then all of a sudden we're at that intersection in Harlem, and there was just this huge collision on the left side of the car. Someone T-boned us, I guess, at a light. And the car kind of fishtailed like way over to the right side of the road and like spun way out of control and everything. And the driver was out. Like, I think he hit his head and, you know, the windows were broken and the airbags went off and, you know, he was bleeding and everything. And so I kind of stumble out like I have no idea. Keep in mind, I've been in the state of New York for like 15 minutes, you know. I stumble out and I just didn't even know what had happened. And then, you know, there were all these like, well, there's just lots of stuff everywhere. Parked cars, garbage bins, you know, and there are all these people standing kind of outside, you know, in these heavy coats and stuff. And they were trying to grab me. I stagger out of the cab with all my crap, you know, trombone case, backpack. And all these people were like, they're like, hold up, you know, and like grabbing me and like trying to keep me from leaving. I'm trying to like call 911, you know, I'm like, yeah, we're at the corner of this and this. And I was trying to do so many things. I just got really scared. So I started running away. It's probably really funny. It wasn't funny when it happened, but it's funny now. I start running and like slippering, you know, because there's like 3 or 4 inches of snow on the ground at this point. So I'm not really going very fast. And I got my trombone, you know, it was probably hilarious to watch. And I started taking all these stupid turns because they felt like they were chasing me. And I don't know, I was just very scared in that moment. And I kept running around, you know, until I found another cab and climbed into it. And my phone was, well, it had been soaked, you know, because I was out there on the phone. So it wasn't working super well. And it was at like 1%. And that's when I messaged Dr. Lou over Discord, because I was thinking, okay, I need somebody who's reputable to be able to tell Joe. I had a lesson with him the next day, and I was like, you need to tell Joe that I'm not there, because I didn't know if the cab driver, like, he was having a hard time understanding me and speaking English and stuff, and I was saying, yeah, Nyack, and he's like, no, you're like, you're here, because he thought I was saying New York. It was a very strange and complicated near-death, you know, kind of situation. And so the message was me panicking, being like, hey, you need to tell Joe Alessi that I'm not going to be there because, you know, I'm dead on the side of the road in Harlem or in the hospital or something, you know. I thought that I was going to end up in the hospital probably that night. And I didn't, and it all worked out fine, you know, and my lesson was the next day, which was still very scary, and, like, it didn't go really well because, of a number of factors, but this was one of them, you know. Right. So that was my New York welcome. But it's almost good that that happened to me as soon as I got in, because then it was like, okay, well, you know, can't really get worse than that, right? Like, now I know what to avoid. It was good that I saw the worst of the city right on my, you know, within 30 minutes of being there, because it could only go up from there.
When I was teaching at the Norwegian Music Academy, and this is before Mari's time, but we took a number of people from the brass ensemble, and we went to New York and then Chicago, and we heard the New York Philharmonic and then Chicago Symphony. And when we were in New York, we actually had a master class with Joel Essie. But I'll never forget the ride when we had a taxi ride. I think it was maybe from the airport, or I think we took a bus and then a taxi. And Mari, I don't know if you remember Camilla or not, if she was there.
Yeah.
She was so frightened when she got in the taxi, the way these taxi drivers drive in New York compared to Norway, because they're very, very cautious in Norway and in New York. It's just, you know,
yeah.
You fear for your life.
Free for all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so to get into Norway, to get into Juilliard, you had to take auditions. And so, Mari, when you auditioned for Oslo, had you taken auditions before that, or was that sort of your first audition?
Probably had taken a couple of auditions before, because I did a music education bachelor before. Then I took an audition, and I also applied to other schools right before I did the Oslo auditions, but I didn't have a lot of experience.
And now, I mean, now you take, like in Frankfurt, I think Klaus has, and also in Oslo, I think Jonas Haltia had audition classes, right? Had to take an audition or audition training courses or things like that?
Yeah.
What have you learned from that? I mean, are there certain things that you do now that are really different from when you first started taking auditions?
I'm not sure. I think I know better how to prepare, and I kind of have a better way of dealing with the stress.
Which is how?
I'm not sure. It's difficult to explain.
Uh-huh.
But I think I let my thoughts go in every direction, and if anything happened, I would think about this, and then everything will just get really bad before. And also, I think just standing in front of people playing a lot makes me more comfortable with the situation, and that it happens more often, so that it's not like once a year or once every second month, then it gets more normal. I think that helps. And also staying focused and working on the concentration and not finding back when something happens, not expecting that everything will be perfect. I think that helps. But I think also just I've grown in this situation. Before, it was really, really bad.
I remember you told me something once, and I've actually passed this on ever since, which is such a really good idea, and it's probably used by a lot of people, but I had not thought about it, which is when you would go into audition, you would put your cell phone in your pocket and you would record yourself so that afterwards you could listen to it and really know exactly what you did and get a true representation of how it went.
Yeah, in some ways that helps. And also when I think it was really, really bad, it was not everything that was really bad. And also knowing more what really happened, because when I get out of the audition, I kind of don't remember what really happened.
Yeah. How about you, Mel? And tell the story about when you auditioned for Joel Essie at Juilliard, walking down the street and your phone ringing.
Oh, yeah. In terms of audition preparation, Juilliard was among the other schools that I applied for this year. And I've never done anything like that before in terms of big auditions. And so, you know, I kind of cut my teeth in the summer of 2021 of doing these auditions and playing for some big people. I was fortunate to go out to Boston and play for some of the faculty at NEC and stuff like that. Apart from that, I had no real other audition experience. And so I was kind of just by myself, you know, making the pre-screening videos and then preparing for the second round, you know, the live audition round. It was very, very difficult, you know, and I did just hundreds of takes for every piece that was asked. It was just very hard also to listen back and decide, like, okay, take 139 or take 7, you know, like listening through all the takes was just like, oh, geez. And at a certain point, it's like, I sound so bad on all of them. It's like, what is the point? And by the time I got to the audition, I was a little bit too hot. You know, I had over-practiced. And I had Manhattan School of Music audition the day before Juilliard's. And that one did not go very well. You know, I was really nervous and everything. And Per Brevig was on the panel for that. And he came up to me afterwards and was like, hey, you know, you play really well and said all these nice things. And I thought he was trying to let me off easy. You know, he's a nice guy. And Juilliard was the next day. And I was the only person that had auditioned for both schools. I mean, maybe someone did it online because I think due to COVID, that was still an option, you know. But I had to go in person for Juilliard, and I was the only person that did, you know, both schools. March 1st was Juilliard, and Manhattan was the day before that. And that was not a good idea, you know, because I was so tired, and I had the rehearsal with the pianist and stuff. And I was doing okay on the day of my Juilliard audition until, you know, I got to the warm-up room with all the other trombonists. And that was a stressful place to be, man. Oh, my God. Let me tell you, that was horrible. And so, you know, I went and I was just paralyzed with fear. I mean, Bolero barely came out and they started tearing apart my high range and all this stuff. And there were some tears in the warm-up room and it was not just me, you know. And there were a lot after because I kind of stumbled out of the building when I was done and went back to my hotel. And I thought I did so poorly. I was just really disappointed in myself. And I was like, after seeing the school, I really, really wanted it. You know, and I felt like it had been taken away from me. Mari, when you mentioned you didn't realize how much you enjoyed trumpet until you weren't able to do it, it reminded me of that. It was similar because I thought, you know, oh, there's no way that was good enough and you're not going to make it in. And I really, really wanted to. I just wanted nothing more than just to go to that school. And so I left the hotel just kind of mindlessly wandering around Manhattan because I was like, I'm at square one, basically. That was a horrible audition. I didn't get in. And I texted Joe Alessi. I was like, thank you for working with me in January, and it was an honor to play with all you guys this afternoon. You know, I was just really blessed to have even had the opportunity to play for them. I mean, that was just an incredible thing. And he, see, I know this now, but at the time, I didn't know. He always likes to talk on the phone, you know. And so I text him that, and he fires right back, give me a call when you can. And I thought, oh, no. You know, I thought he was going to rip me a new one. I really did. I was so scared. You know, I had to sit down. I was on, like, 57th Street. I had to just sit down because I had no idea, you know, what he was about to say. I thought he was just going to be like, you should really reconsider. You know, I thought he was going to be so mean. And he was actually very kind on the phone, you know, saying all these nice things about how, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I'd leave here feeling pretty good if I were you, that kind of stuff. And saying how he really liked how I did and, you know, giving me lots of compliments. And it was just so humbling to be sitting there on the corner, you know, and there's all these sirens going by and everything. And I'm sitting on the curb next to this halal cart, you know, on the phone with the principal trombone of the New York Philharmonic. And he's telling me things were looking positive at that point about me getting in. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, like, I can't believe this is my life. I was just so, but I was still nervous, you know, because I didn't know for sure whether I'd gotten in or not. You know, he wasn't allowed to say and stuff. But it was just like, that was the closest I had come. You know, I had like touched it, like, oh my God, that is a possibility for me. You know, the door isn't fully closed yet. So that was like a life-changing experience. There's no going back after that in terms of considering other schools and things, which I did do, but it was a difficult decision. But I think that phone call, you know, is really what helped me choose the school that I did. And it was truly life-changing.
In part two, Mal and Mari first talk about freelancing while being a student and then speak more in depth about auditions.